And over the course of more than six decades, they did more than virtually anyone else in reshaping America's role in the world during the post-World War II period.
That's Lawrence Haas, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Lawrence J. Haas is an award-winning journalist and former senior White House official. Haas is a senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council, a columnist on foreign affairs, and a TV and radio commentator. He's the author of five other books, including Harry and Arthur, Truman, Vandenberg, and the Partnership That Created the Free World, which the Wall Street Journal named one of the top 10 nonfiction books of 2016. He joins us to talk about his latest book, The Kennedys in the World, How Jack, Bobby, and Ted Remade America's Empire. Larry, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Before we talk about some specifics from the book, give us an overview. What will readers find here?
Well, the new story is that everybody knows that Joe and Rose Kennedy groomed their sons, Jack, Bobby, and Ted, for success. But what very few people know is that it was a certain kind of success. As they were raising them, they directed the boys to look abroad, to think about the world, to learn about the world, to care about the world. And they sent them overseas to travel, and Joe set them up as foreign correspondents on their travels so they could write about the world to audiences back home. And over the course of years, they came to learn deeply about the different peoples and cultures and ideologies around the world, and they put that knowledge to good use. And over the course of more than 60 years, they played a tremendous role on broad issues of war and peace, as well as specific challenges that the United States faced in Asia and Africa and Latin America and Europe. And over the course of more than six decades, they did more than virtually anyone else in reshaping America's role in the world during the post-World War II period. So that's what the book's about.
And obviously, there's a lot of factual information in this book, but this book also looks behind the public image and gives us some insight in who the brothers were on a personal level. Tell us more about what people will find in this book about the Kennedys as human beings.
You know, there's an image of the Kennedy brothers and the Kennedy family in general as this very tight-knit group of two parents, nine children, always together, always getting along, always having fun, always supporting one another. And, you know, if you look below the surface, you see that, in fact, the Kennedys were like many of the rest of us, what we would call these days somewhat dysfunctional. You know, the brothers did not mesh very well when they were young. The oldest brother, Joe Jr., when he was growing up, he felt very threatened by Jack, and he used to bully and beat him regularly and badly, once sending him to the hospital for 28 stitches. Jack had many struggles as he was growing up, not just the bullying of his by his older brother, but also the fact that his mother was strangely cold to him. And in fact, at one point in well into adulthood, Jack told a friend, "My mother never hugged me. Never, never." Which is quite a telling statement. And he also had a wreck of a body. He had scarlet fever and very serious when he was two, and very serious stomach and back problems throughout his life. And it made life for him a daily chore. And yet he emerges as this kind of happy, carefree, fun-loving person. Bobby is a classic middle child. He's the seventh of nine. He's sort of stuck between these two older brothers, Joe Jr. and Jack, who look like they're set for stardom, and Ted, the youngest, who the family is doting on. And he constantly finds the need to prove himself. And he does reckless things throughout his life, skiing, dangerous slopes, swimming, dangerous waters, wading into crowds overseas when even his security details can't guarantee his safety. And then there's Ted, you know, the baby of the family. He grows up really quite lonely. He is shuffled among 10 different schools throughout the course of his life. And yet somehow he has enough love to build this self-confidence. And in spending a lot of time in his early years with his legendary grandfather, Honey Fitz, the former Boston mayor, he learns the skills of retail politics, how to shake hands and slap backs and offer condolences and build coalitions. And at the end of the day, he becomes kind of a happy warrior on Capitol Hill, the person who has these legendary skills to make things happen, to turn ideas into laws. But they all are quite different, even though we remember them as these close-knit brothers who work very closely together when they reach adulthood. That is true, but it leaves out the early years when the story is really much, much different.
So I want to talk to you a bit more about their upbringing, because you note in the book that because of the way they were educated, etc., that the brothers really didn't know each other that well as children. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, they spent a lot of time away from one another. They all went to boarding schools. And so Joe was one place, and sometimes Jack was, Joe Jr. being the oldest brother who later died at war in 1944 at the age of 29. Then Jack the second, he was somewhere else. Bobby was somewhere else. Ted was somewhere else. Or when they became old enough, they were traveling very widely. Bobby, in fact, at a fairly young age, spent 6 months away from everyone as he traveled across Europe and the Middle East with a friend. Jack took long trips across Europe and then later across Asia. Ted went to Africa more than once, and he traveled across Latin America. So from the fact that they were in school at different places, and they were then away for long periods of travel, yes, they did actually not know each other as well as people think. And the second thing I would say about that is that even when they spent time together, they didn't always mesh very well. Their personalities were quite different. Jack was very free and carefree and charming and always having a good time and always had a smile on his face. Bobby, by contrast, was really quite dark and dour, middle child struggling to fit in. And Ted, the youngest, was a bit chubby as a child, and that was something that did not escape notice on the part of the parents or the other siblings. So he was the butt of some jokes over that time. And it really wasn't until later when they became adults that their personalities really meshed a lot more, and they really formed these very tight bonds that people think of when they think about the Kennedys.
Mm-hmm. But you note that when they were younger, Jack and Ted actually had a closer relationship than Jack and Bobby did.
That's right, because for some reason, Jack decided that Ted was someone that he should mentor. Jack and Bobby were about 8 years apart. Jack and Ted were 14 years apart. And right from the start, Jack saw this younger son as the one that he really needed to bring under his wing. And right after the birth, he writes his parents and says, "Can I be godfather to the baby?" And it really starts there. And over the course of time, he really tries to encourage Ted to, you know, get his head on straight and then to pursue a life of public service. And he had a tremendous influence in Ted's maturation and eventual focus on public service that Jack and Bobby had previously pursued themselves.
As you mentioned, the parents groomed them, and particularly their father groomed them for this life of public service on the national stage. But I was curious also about their father's example in terms of their personal lives and how they interacted with people and the women in their lives?
Well, of course, you know, when you have a domineering father, that person is going to have an influence on your attitudes and on your behavior. And it's no secret that Joe Kennedy was a philanderer. So it's no great surprise that Jack Kennedy became a philanderer. Now, Bobby never did. He was very much of a devout Catholic, much in the mold of his mother, who was also a very devout Catholic. And I didn't find any evidence that Bobby was like that at all. But then Ted was. And we all know legendary stories about Jack Kennedy and Ted Kennedy. So certainly they did get that from their father, for sure.
As you note in the book, the brothers' views were very much the same when they became adults, at least in relation to the Cold War and America's role in the world, at least up until the point that Jack Kennedy was assassinated. And then things changed for Bobby and also for Ted. Tell us a little bit more about what was going on there.
So, as you say, through Jack's death in 1963, they are all hardcore Cold Warriors. But Vietnam changes things. I mean, Vietnam had begun as a Cold War venture under Jack, but you'll recall that Jack only sent military advisors and did not, I see no evidence that he was going to militarize that conflict. Jack is assassinated in November of 63. Lyndon Johnson takes over, and he decides that no matter what, he is not going to lose this war. And he quickly militarizes things and, you know, brings at one point over 500,000 U.S. troops to Vietnam. What began as a Cold War venture under Jack turns into a horror show. And that deeply influences Bobby and Ted. And it's not so much that they become any less anti-communist. They were deep in their bones, anti-communist to their dying days. Bobby in 1968 and Ted in 2009. And that never changed. What did change is that they no longer believe that the Cold War was the most important global challenge that America faced. It turned out that they came to believe in the mid-60s that it was Vietnam. And the horror of Vietnam transforms them from these hardcore Cold Warriors to liberal doves who become much more suspicious about American use of power and American ability to influence the course of events. And you see that first with Bobby, who, you know, dies tragically by assassination in 68. But then Ted sort of extends that over the course of the next four decades, and he is very suspicious of the use of American power. And of course, you see that in his opposition to both U.S. wars in Iraq in 1991 and then again in 2003.
When Jack and Bobby were working together in Jack's administration, I'm wondering how sort of that difference in personality plus that maybe trust that the brothers have helped Jack get through some of the crises he faced during his presidency.
Well, you know, the first crisis that Jack faces is the Bay of Pigs. He's handed this CIA plan in which about 1,500 Cuban exiles under the cover of American power are going to invade the island and somehow ignite a populist uprising to topple Castro. That turns into a complete disaster. Most of the exiles are either captured or killed. It's a great embarrassment. This is April of 1961. It's only 3 months into the administration. From that moment on, Jack leans on Bobby, not just on domestic policy, but on foreign policy more than anyone else. He trusts Bobby for all the future major challenges. So Bobby helps him steer through what's known as the Berlin crisis, when Khrushchev, the Soviet leader, is threatening to kick the United States out of West Berlin and, you know, unify Germany under Soviet control. And of course, most importantly, he relies on Bobby more than anyone else during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And there's a key moment when he needs to send Bobby to meet with the Soviet ambassador Dobrynin to try to work something out quietly behind the scenes. He doesn't send the national security advisor. He doesn't send the defense secretary. He doesn't send the secretary of state. He sends Bobby, who is actually the attorney general. And when you think about it, not really in the normal command when it comes to foreign policy, but it's that personal connection that was developed through the 1950s, where he comes to rely on Bobby at moments of crisis more than anyone else. And it is a reflection, by the way, of what Joe Kennedy taught the boys. And even though they didn't necessarily follow it when they were in their youths, they follow it when they're adults. And he says to them on more than one occasion, stick together. And when they're adults, they do stick together. And Jack really pursued that in his administration and how much he leaned on Bobby at moments of crisis.
I'm talking with Lawrence Haas. The Kennedys in the World is the name of the book, how Jack, Bobby, and Ted remade America's empire. And one of the things you note is that due to his long tenure in Congress, Ted Kennedy's influence on America was probably more significant than Jack and Bobby, although he's rarely given credit for that.
He is known as the great liberal lion in Washington. And when people think of Ted Kennedy, they think of healthcare, civil rights, labor rights, education. But as I note in the book, and it's another new story that I tell in the book, his influence on foreign policy was at least as great as his influence on domestic affairs. He led the effort, he spearheaded the effort in Congress to override President Reagan's veto of sanctions against South Africa over apartheid. This is in the mid-1980s, and he does it as a minority member of the Senate at the time. The Democrats were in the minority when he pulled that off. He led the congressional effort to rein in Reagan's proxy wars against the Soviets in Latin America. He led the effort to begin to change America's view of China. And that goes back to the late 60s and early 70s. And that set the stage for Nixon's opening to China and Carter's normalization. He did more than anyone else over the course of three or four decades as an American official to help finally bring peace to Northern Ireland through the Good Friday Agreement of 98 and the miracle of Stormont in 2007. And finally, in something that he gets almost no credit for because he worked behind the scenes, he forced Moscow and Beijing to free dozens and dozens of political prisoners as a condition of working with him. And they desperately wanted to work with him because they knew how influential he was in the Senate. So his achievements on foreign policy, on reshaping America's role in the world, absolutely equal the legendary achievements on domestic policy that everyone is quite familiar with.
Larry, I'm curious, based on what you've learned about the Kennedys' political views and their aspirations for this country, what do you imagine they'd think about the state of America today?
Well, I'm sure that they would find a number of things to be horrified by. They certainly would have been concerned about the retreat of America's role in the world that began under President Obama, but really took off in a big way with the isolationism of President Trump, the kinds of things that President Biden now is trying to reverse. I think they would have been horrified by our reluctance under Obama and especially Trump to promote freedom and democracy around the world, something that they did all the time. All three of the brothers were promoting freedom, democracy, human rights, setting America up as a moral beacon to be emulated around the world, something that we have not done enough of in recent years. I think they would have been horrified, frankly, because they were so deeply patriotic. They would have been horrified by all of the machinations that we see right now with regard to the aftermath of the 2020 presidential election and the continuing skepticism that Joe Biden is a legitimate president and some of the, you know, emerging restraints on voter rights that we're seeing in Georgia and Florida, and perhaps we'll see elsewhere. So, yes, I think they would see much to be very concerned about, both in terms of foreign affairs, which is obviously the subject that we're talking about today, but as well as domestic affairs, because they really believe so deeply in their bones about America, its special role, its responsibility, what it shows the world, and how others should emulate America, because the more freedom and democracy we have in the world, the more safety, security, prosperity we are likely to have in the world.
There is so much more in this book that we don't have time to talk about in this interview. I'm wondering how you hope this book will help inform people's understanding of the legacy of the Kennedy brothers.
Well, I certainly hope that I have brought a new aspect of the Kennedy story to the attention of readers, because it really is a new story about this particular element, this globalism, this education about the world, about America's special place in the world. So that's one thing. Secondly, I hope people will look at it and see through the lens of the Kennedy brothers, with all of the mistakes that we've made, all the failures and foibles, that we really have played an important role in defending and promoting freedom and democracy in the post-World War II period. And it's made a difference. It's made a difference. We have provided moral support to millions and millions of people. We have defended freedom at very perilous moments. And when America is not there to do that, there's a void, because no one else can fill the role. It can't be Europe as a whole. It can't be Germany as an individual power. Someone, especially now, with freedom in retreat for more than a dozen years, based on the ratings that you see of different institutions, political rights and civil liberties, only the United States can set the example, can rally the world toward an expansion of freedom and democracy. It is a vital role. It is something the Kennedys took seriously. We have had success, even with all the failures that we have had, and it's vitally important we continue to do that. And I hope that people will read the Kennedy story, see its relevance to today, and understand the role that we must play in the world if we want to have a brighter future.
Again, the book is The Kennedys in the World: How Jack, Bobby, and Ted Remade America's Empire. It's by Lawrence J. Haas. Larry, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes, and you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.